We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, Marty Schottenheimer went with an elite quarterback for a small amount of time. It didn't work. He goes back to his bread and butter, which is kind of, you know, limited quarterbacks. And it was enough to get them to 13 wins. Now, is it enough to win in the playoffs? I think in the case of the Chiefs, the answer has been no. I mean, you need Len Dawson and Patrick Mahomes to win your Super Bowls.
It's January 96, Colts at Chiefs. This is Remember That Game, the podcast about sporting events that take you on a journey and just maybe chart the path of the zeitgeist. I'm your host, Thomas Emmerich, and my guest is Eric Eager, Vice President of Sumer Sports and co-host with Thomas Dimitroff of the Sumer Sports Show. Last time you were on, Eric, we did another game from that weekend with Green Bay upsetting the Niners. How does it feel to be back in the 95 divisional round and on the outskirts of the blizzard of 96?
Yeah, it feels cool. Yeah, I remember that game. Craig Newsom recovering an Adam Walker fumble. This one didn't have nearly as much scoring, but it was a lot of fun to watch. I actually remember where I was when all this madness went down. So it's fun to be back.
Colts were without Tony Siragusa and Marshall Faulk, but with the way these teams were built and the sub-zero wind chill, was there a counter anywhere for you to run and grab Indy with the points and the under 41.5? What was your access at that time?
Oh, I was probably like 9 years old, so I certainly didn't have access to any of that. it takes you back to a time, though. I can't imagine there's another game. We all call this the Lynn Elliott game in Kansas City, but Kerry Blanchard, I forgot Kerry Blanchard had missed two of the three kicks that he was charged with making. It's funny what you remember you don't remember.
Lynn Elliott's legacy, did it boost him in retrospect a little bit, the conditions that day?
So I don't think so, because if you look at Lynn Elliott's career, this is actually like the second in a string of like just badness for Elliott. So he was the Cowboys kicker in 1992, and as a rookie, he won the Super Bowl. And he made 68.7% of his kicks, which was bad back in the day. He missed some extra points. In fact, in 1995 for the Chiefs, he missed three extra points. He missed five career 20-yard extra points, which is funny, in 4 years. But in 1993, the first two games of the season, he missed enough kicks for with the Dallas to start 0-2. Everybody remembers the 1993 year because Emmitt Smith sat out with a contract holdout. Dallas started that season 0-2. They signed Emmitt Smith to the contract he wanted. They end up going up. You know, Emmitt wins league MVP. They win the Super Bowl. But they also cut their kicker, Lynn Elliott, that day. Oh. And went with Eddie Murray, which was funny because Lynn, of course, then goes to Kansas City, has a pretty solid year in 1994. 83% of his kicks. And then even in the regular season in 95 for a Chiefs team that won 13 games, hit 80% of his field goals. And so it really, like, he just had a couple meltdowns in his career and it was, you know, curtains for him.
They had a pretty great studio for this one. Mike Ditka, who had coached Jim Harbaugh recently, and Joe Montana, who had Steve Bono as his understudy. Ditka second-guessed Marty Schottenheimer, said, if my kicker is missing kicks down the stretch, there's no way I would have been playing him. Marty Schottenheimer's legacy, do you think he gets unfair evaluation due to guys missing kicks?
I think Marty, you know, you get to where you get to because of the things you value, right? So when Schottenheimer got to 89, you know, to the Chiefs in 89, he had Ron Jaworski and Steve DeBerg at quarterback. And then they went with DeBerg in 90 and 91 and then Dave Craig in 92. And so your caretaker quarterbacks, that's who you're really valuing. And, you know, 93, 94, of course, they went with Montana with Bono behind him. And, you know, funnily, you know, they go 11-5 in 93, win a playoff game. In fact, this, you know, Chiefs loss at Arrowhead against the Colts was the beginning of them losing basically every home playoff game from 1993 to 2018, when Patrick Mahomes beat the Colts in Arrowhead to break the streak. And they go with Bono. Now, Bono was 20th in the NFL in passer rating. He did make a Pro Bowl with that 95 Chiefs team. But it was sort of this idea of like, oh, you know, Marty Schottenheimer went with an elite quarterback for a small amount of time. It didn't work. He goes back to his bread and butter, which is kind of, you know, limited quarterbacks. And it was enough to get them to 13 wins. Now, is it enough to win in the playoffs? I think in the case of the Chiefs, the answer has been no. I mean, you need Len Dawson and Patrick Mahomes to win your Super Bowls, and everybody else has fallen short. So I think Schottenheimer engineered an excellent decade of football in Kansas City, but it was always sort of capped off by the quarterbacks that he chose to go with.
Yeah, you see a bit on the Chiefs' first offensive drive in the game. They get 3rd and 6 from the Colts 40. Steve Bono has this great pocket in front of him. Carl Peterson, Marty Schottenheimer had done a pretty good job drafting, developing Tim Grunhard in the 2nd, Will Shields in the 3rd, Dave Sott in the 7th. Still no pressure, plenty of space to step up. And Bono hits Kimball Anders in the flat, 1 yard, punt from the 39, touchback. The conditions are rough this day, but how does this have you feeling about Marty Ball and the Hackett offense 0-0 for a little bit here?
It's so funny because in the league back then, like, it was just impossible to throw in these kind of conditions. And it's harder still, of course, but with glove technology the way it is and just like how much better passers are, it's not impossible anymore. And I think that, you know, when you think about this particular game, like, they just weren't completing passes. I mean, both Bono and Harbaugh, everybody looks at Harbaugh, you know, his performance during this Colts playoff stretch that continued into championship game. But both starting quarterbacks were under 50% in this game. And it just, to me, it was just like, you're watching this game, and you're like, you're either going to have to run the football. There was an interesting stat that they talked about at the beginning of this game. The Chiefs were the only team in the top 10 in the NFL in rushing yards without a 1,000-yard back. And they were first in the NFL in rushing. And it felt like they didn't lean in too much. You know, Allen did have 94 yards. But they only gave 26 carries to running backs in the game. You know, but neither team could really throw, and it was very clear from the very beginning.
Harbaugh ended up with 9 rushes. His receivers and tight ends combined for 8 catches. The Chiefs receivers and tight ends combined for 7. So a lot of going through the backfield on both sides. I mean, Colts had Marshall Faulk out, couldn't dump off to him. Chiefs have that Paul Hackett offense, and you later see it with the Nathaniel Hackett offense getting the running back a fair amount of targets. You'll manufacture out of the backfield. Do you think this should have played to the Chiefs' advantage more than the Colts?
I think so. I certainly think that, especially without Marshall Faulk, like, the Chiefs, you know, are probably kicking themselves for having lost this game. And, you know, they were a very good team, you know, going through their backs. And during the Bono Montana era, they never really had good wide receivers. And so, like, you know, Lake Dawson does get a touchdown early in this game. But for the most part, like, they don't have the downfield horses to really get it done. And, you know, I think that would have played the Chiefs' advantage, especially being a heavy favorite here and a fairly decent team in general.
As you mentioned, Bono hits Lake Dawson on a back shoulder, 17 yards down the field at the seam. Quite the juxtaposition to the rest of the action we'd see from Chiefs' pass offense. Bono struggled down the stretch. Came out hot early on, 300 yards on a Monday night win against the reigning AFC champion San Diego Chargers. Rookie Tamarick Vanover won that game on a overtime kick return, but the Chiefs just seemed to miss some opportunities. They have the Vanover fumble on the punt return in the Colts end. And then they also have Harbaugh dead to rights on third down. Neil Smith collides with a teammate. He's out the rest of the drive. Colts lead an 18-play touchdown drive to tie it up 7-7 on a play that looks a little like what Reed would draw up for Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney faking the backfield motion one week. It's 7-7 at that point. I remember like watching that game and being just kind of shocked that, oh, wait, we're having chances to put this Colts team away and we're somehow tied.
Yeah, it was. I mean, like, they moved the football, obviously, by all the missed kicks, but then there was also turnovers. There was even, like, the end of the half where Bono throws in the end zone. It looks like an interception. It gets called back, and then Lynn Elliott misses the kick right away after that. And then that was even to the point where, you know, obviously Bono got lifted at the end of the game for Rich Gannon, who ended up being an MVP in the NFL. Rich Gannon, who had gotten traded by the Vikings to the Commanders in 93, was out of football all entirely in 94, was the Chiefs' backup all year. Bono had yet to throw an interception in the first half of the game, and they just made enough goofs in other side of the field to only have the 7 points going into the half. And then, of course, in the second half, it transitioned to Bono throwing the ball to the other team.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The approach to the quarterback position here brought to mind some things you and Thomas Dimitroff were talked about on the Sooner Sports podcast. Colts go multiple veteran middle-class signees, Craig Erickson that year and Harbaugh the year before, Chiefs with Rich Gannon that year, Steve Bono the year before. Is this kind of approach less optimal today than it was back then? And how would you rate their strategy for that period of time?
Well, it wasn't even that Craig Erickson was a signing. I want to say that the Colts traded a first-round pick to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for Craig Erickson, which is even more insane. Erickson, by the way, had been an Eagles draft pick, did not make the team in 91, which is funny because that Eagles team started four quarterbacks after Randall Cunningham tore his ACL. He goes to Tampa Bay. In Tampa Bay, Erickson started 14 games. He was like fifth in the NFL in passer rating or something. He gets traded, and Harbaugh and Don Majkowski were just okay for the 94 Colts. And so then they traded a first-round pick and I think another draft pick for Erickson. Erickson wins the starting job, but it's so bad that he ends up giving way to Harbaugh, and that's how it ended up being. So it's funny because he wasn't even like the worst first-round draft pick trade for a quarterback in that decade. Like Rick Meyer went for a first-round pick to the Bears, and like Chris Chandler was traded to Tampa Bay for what ended up being the second overall pick, which is crazy. So I think teams just threw a lot of numbers at the quarterback position because it wasn't as impactful as it used to be, as it is now. And you could sort of mix and match. You could go with a guy like Erickson and then go with a guy like Harbaugh and, you know, the egg on their face. Imagine today if a team traded a first-round pick for a quarterback and he only started two games for the team, or three games in the case of Erickson. Yeah. That would be, you know, incredibly funny.
They did not want to put Craig Erickson in the game when Jim Harbaugh got banged up running the ball in the second half. There was one exchange in the sideline that was kind of wild. Dick Enberg throws to Jim Gray in the sideline. Jim Harbaugh will be all right. He took a shot and the wind knocked out of him. Spit up a little bit of blood, but he's feeling okay. Trying to walk it off, throwing some balls, and he will return to the game. Back to you, Dick. I thought that was a very Jim Harbaugh sideline report. How do you make sense of the 95 Colts? As you mentioned, Jim Harbaugh took over for Craig Erickson. This is a bottom half of the league team in Pro Football Reference SRS for the 95 season. And somehow they're here in the divisional round, hanging with the one seed, would end up on the doorstep of the Super Bowl eventually. How does this Colts team make sense?
Well, I think Mark Tabrota was a good coach. I think Harbaugh had some magic to him, the defense. When you're the Colts and you pick basically, I mean, the 92 Colts just 3 years prior to this pick, first and second in the draft, they got Quentin Coriad, who had a big interception in that. With the second pick, Steve Ettman was picked first. In 94, they picked second overall. They got Marshall Faulk. You're always sort of picking high in the draft and you're getting, really premium players. At some point, it has to turn around and turn out and be okay, right?
Jim Irsay as GM when they moved to Baltimore, or when they moved from Baltimore to Indianapolis, Bill Tobin in 94. So 7-7, third quarter. Bono has a stretch where he throws three picks and passes for only 15 yards. Colts take a 10-7 lead. Marty yanks him for Rich Gannon. On the NFL primetime package, Boomer says, bringing in Rich Loose Gannon. And then you get the highlight where Gannon runs down to the 25. The sudden music shift on NFL primetime. I mean, give that producer an Emmy when they bring in dun 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 at just the right time. Just 27 years later, gets me dialed in. Gannon goes on the field to Lake Dawson. They nearly end it in their favor, but they end up kicking the 42-yarder. What do you think about the process there once they brought in Gannon and got in field goal range?
I mean, he got them in range, which is great. I think that, unfortunately, they probably laid up too far away for a field goal. I know that they tried, obviously, to go downfield. It wasn't like they just ran the ball a few times and did all that. But I do wonder about the strength of the argument for kicking that long of a field goal. Because to me, especially in that condition with the kicker who was struggling that much, it just seemed like a bad idea.
A league-high 6 straight playoff appearances for the Chiefs. Probably have a lot of hopes going to the next season. What was your outlook coming out of this brutal game? But, I mean, a lot of good personnel that Carl Peterson brought in over the years.
Yeah, I think, they ended up losing 3 straight games at the end of 96, so they don't make the playoffs. 97, with Elvis Gerback, they went 13-3 again. They lose at home in the divisional round again after a bye. So, knowing with hindsight, 2020, it's obviously, it shouldn't be one of those things that's too overly, makes one too overly optimistic. But in 6 straight playoff appearances, was obviously impressive. It's just like there was always the quarterback that was probably never going, you were never going to be able to get there with the quarterback was always sort of the issue, though. Montana being gone, there's a little bit of a hope in Bono because of how well he sort of initially played, but he fell off enough at the end. It was kind of a grind. And that's, I think, where people, I don't think there was as much hope as maybe there is now, of course, obviously with Mahomes being able to, host the conference title game every year.
Carl Peterson had elevated the outlook for the organization over the years. At least there's that. Cut his teeth as GM in Philly. Then he went to the USFL, dominated there. To the Chiefs in 89 when the franchise was down bad, hadn't won a playoff game since the early 70s, and wasn't even profitable. Turned things around pretty quickly. From the 70s through the 2000s, did anyone have a better sustained run as a front office exec in football than Carl Peterson?
I mean, unless you count Jimmy Johnson, the moves he made at Dallas, taking that team from being 15-1, very similar time, right? We remember the 1989 draft, where the top 5 picks were, Aikman, Tony Mandarich, of course, was the outlier, Barry Sanders, Deion Sanders, and Derek Thomas. You had Derek Thomas, of course, go to the Chiefs. You had Troy Aikman go to the Dallas Cowboys. By the middle of the decade, those teams were both 13-3 or 12-4, maybe Dallas was. It's funny, though, how much parity has become in the league. They were saying of the 22 teams with the best record in the NFL, the graphic was at the beginning of the game, 19 of them made the Super Bowl and 15 won the Super Bowl. And the Chiefs were very much beginning a run of a streak where the best team in the NFL was not ending up in the Super Bowl.
the Chiefs secondary played particularly, I mean, well, I mean, part of it was the conditions, but, you know, number one defense overall that year. They had a chance to put the pedal down. They actually forced an interception on that year's top-rated passer, Jim Harbaugh, named Captain Comeback. They target running back split out wide. Mark Collins, a veteran cornerback, eats their lunch. So a lot of the offense going through the running backs for the Colts as well, even in the pass game. Secondary coached by Herm Edwards, who Carl Peterson signed as an undrafted free agent to the Eagles back in 77 when those teams were making the playoffs every season with Vermeule. How valuable can it be for a head front office exec to have fruitful, continuing relationships with past players and organizations? And how has that seemed to benefit over both the past decade, but also the decades under Carl Peterson?
Yeah, I don't know. It depends upon what Chiefs fans thought about what happened to Herm Edwards once he became the actual head coach of the team. Kind of a mixed bag there. Right. I know they made the playoffs in 06. But it's interesting. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Carl Peterson's a football kind of legend and has, you know, spans, you know, multiple leagues even, right? Being an executive with the USFL's Philadelphia Stars, Baltimore Stars at the end, made like three championships. It's Jim Mora was his coach there. Like you have just such a Rolodex when you're somebody like that and you've been involved with so many individuals that it's probably not hard to find the best person when you have an opening.
Peterson as a general manager and Marty Schottenheimer as a coach, front office and their coaching staff in the 90s and that kind of, and what kind of impact do you think that's had in the league, that Kansas City football in the 1990s?
Yeah, well, you had, Bill Cowher was the defensive coordinator until 91, and then he was the coach for the Steelers forever. That's a really good one. You had Hackett. Paul Hackett was kind of brought in on that side. But you also had Gunther Cunningham, who ended up being a coordinator, the coach for the Chiefs, and then the coordinator, and actually a PFF employee by the time, before he passed away. You had a lot of different, like, sort of positional coaches as well that were crazy. So
you had some interactions, I bet, with, like, Mike McCarthy years ago, quarterbacks coach for the Chiefs that day. Between Gannon and Bono and eventually Gerback, a four-year stretch where the Chiefs threw the fewest interceptions in the league. How much of a feather do you think that is in his cap, and how important was it that at least the Chiefs were good at limiting turnovers?
Yeah, and they were the best team in turnover differential for the whole 90s and were by like something like 100 turnovers over the next best team. So it was really important, and it's funny because Gerback largely lost his job in Baltimore after taking over for Trent Dilfer because he turned it over too much. So a very interesting result. So yeah, that's cool. So Mike McCarthy, you know, got to coach, you know, future MVP in Rich Gannon, an MVP in Aaron Rodgers. And then briefly, Alex Smith as the first overall pick in San Fran and Aaron Brooks in New Orleans. So kind of storied career for Mike.
This has been another episode of Remember That Game. Please rate, review, subscribe, and check out more episodes.